Hello and welcome to Watch the Throne. What a lovely day. This is episode 22, Head in the Clouds from 2004. I'm Mike Manzi.
And I'm Joey Lewandowski. And Mike, if you asked me, hey Joey, what are all the things you don't like about movies? And then you went out and made a movie with all of those things. You know what movie you would make?
I'm going to take a wild guess. Is it Head in the Clouds?
It sure is. This movie is pretty much everything I don't like about movies.
Ouch.
It is a period piece. It is slow. It's sort of sexist. It's weird. It's dumb. It's like tonally inconsistent.
Oh, yeah.
We have, I don't know if you caught him, but the husband from Trapped is the main guy in this. Your favorite actor.
Wait, what? That's him?
Yes. That's him.
I was like, this guy's terrible. That's amazing. I can't believe it's the same guy. Because I was like, he can't act to save his life. Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
We have everything that I liked from Waking Up in Reno, between the relationship between those two girls, between Charlize and her friend, is absent from this movie, with Charlize and Penelope Cruz returning from Waking Up in Reno.
Yeah.
I don't know that this is the worst movie that we've done, but it might be my least favorite in that I was so bored the entire time. The entire 2 hours. It's such a long movie.
Yeah, it feels like 3 hours plus, to be honest.
Oh,
like,
God.
I don't like this movie either. I don't think it's, like, the worst of the worst or anything like that, but like you said, it's just boring, meandering, and it shifts on a dime. Like, for me, like, the first half played like a terrible Woody Allen period romantic comedy thing.
Oh, I wrote down, hold on, I'm glad you said that, because I wrote down when we first get introduced to Charlize's character, and she is just walking into that guy's room, into Guy's room, his name is Guy.
I know, yeah. I wrote down Guy, and that turned out to be his name, I couldn't believe it.
She walks into his room, and then it's just like, no, don't worry, I'll sleep here, it'll be fine. And then, like, they're talking about, like, how he's popping a boner because he's laying next to her. I'm like, did Woody Allen write this movie? Like, it is so casually creepy and sexist that I was like, it feels like it's one of his movies. So the fact that you said it's meandering like a Woody Allen movie, like, I feel like we're sort of, you know, making fun of it in two different ways, but I'm glad that we have sort of arrived to the same destination.
Yeah, and you know, actually for me, the second half was more tolerable because it turned into like, and I'm not saying like it's good, but for some reason, it sharply turned into like a World War II espionage spy thriller of some kind. Like, I did not see that coming when this movie started.
Don't think that I didn't nominate it for most wildly inconsistent tone, like, because that is 100% going on the list.
But here's the weird thing, like, I feel like it actually pulls some of that stuff off okay, especially in like the last half hour where it's like pseudo Inglourious Basterds meets like Les Miserables to a degree, where they're like, you know, sneaking around doing resistance fighting and in France, you know, under occupied Nazi forces and stuff. Like, I was sort of getting into it, and then I realized the movie's over. I almost wish the movie was just like, you know, Inglourious Basterds light, like what we got in the last half hour, just stretch that out where Charlize is like a spy and there's some kind of like weird, good weird stuff going on, as opposed to just like random weirdness, I felt.
I was mentally checked out by the end, so I did not really pay much attention to the last half hour, which I guess is the best half hour of the movie. I did sort of come back together at the end when her Nazi boyfriend, her, you know, her spy, or like, she's undercover, I guess, like with a Nazi lover.
Yeah, absolutely no one knows, though, that she's undercover. So like her French neighbors think that she's like a Nazi sympathizer and sleeping with the enemy and everything.
Right,
so
which is why she gets murdered off screen at the end of this movie, because she's viewed as this Nazi sympathizer, even though she's just trying to get information and winds up saving Guy with that information.
Yeah, and we learn that she ends up saving like a lot, like she became pretty much like very valuable to the Allied forces, and we don't get a glimpse of any of that. We just get told that at the end, which I feel is a bummer. Like, I wanted to see Charlize do spy stuff. Like, that would have been interesting, especially considering how sort of passive and just flighty and shallow her character is for like 90% of the movie. And then we're supposed to think that that's sort of like an act to a degree at the end. I don't know. I couldn't buy it.
Well, that's why I sort of mentally checked out, is because about halfway through this movie, so the first half of the movie is sort of like this romance, like this period romance, and it's kind of like not necessarily love triangles, even though kind of is, between Charlize and Guy and Penelope Cruz and her boyfriend from the beginning of the movie. It's all these different relationships intertwining, But then halfway through the movie, Penelope Cruz and Guy both leave to go sort of defend Spain against fascism and the Nazis. And, you know, Penelope Cruz becomes a nurse and Guy becomes a soldier. And Charlize doesn't leave because she is like, I don't care about the war, all this different stuff. And so when they separated and it sort of became about them, I was like, oh, well, like, we're sort of done with Charlize, I guess. Because it felt like it was sort of her movie up to that point. And then now here's like the movie going in a different direction, which is fine for a movie to do, which is actually kind of a cool thing to do, I think. But the fact that it returns to Charlize and that she becomes important again by the end, I didn't care by that point. I was like, I'm done. I was only watching it for her. I, in my brain, was like, oh, she's out of this movie. And I was like, okay, on to the next thing.
Yeah, I was expecting her to return. Like, I wasn't expecting to go to war at all in this movie. I thought we were just going to kind of, like, glimpse it from the peripheral. And, like, that was going to be the whole point, is that they are ignoring, like, what's actually going on in the world just to have, like, their time together. But that's going to prove to be catastrophic. Like, they're not going to be able to love during wartime is going to be the thing of this. But then, like, I should have known. Like, we do so many different things. Like, this movie goes so many different places and, like, never commits to any of them. I should have known we were going to go to war for, like, 10 minutes and see an ambush, a battle, and, like, then Penelope Cruz get blown up off screen.
The most understated ambulance explosion in a movie ever, where, like, we an ambulance drive off, and then we hear a noise off screen, cut to the ambulance on its side, charred, cut to her funeral. It's like, what?
Yeah. Well, that, so, like, I had a feeling we were going to get back. I think I knew we were going to come full circle. I had a feeling we were going to end with Charlize. However, right off the bat, this movie is very sort of sneaky. It sets it up to be Charlize, her movie. Like, she seems to be the main character. Like, we're going to follow her. She's,
yes.
You know, but we get voiceover from Guy. So I was like, oh, like, it's really his story. Even if he's not really the central focus, he's telling this. Like, we're seeing all this through his eyes. This is his experience. So when the movie sort of went off on his tangent without Charlize, like, we leave Charlize behind, I was like, okay, here we go. Like, yeah, this movie needs to be his movie for a while.
Right. Yeah.
But I always knew we were going to sort of get back to Charlize. I don't know, I was just so bummed we didn't at least get to see her, like, she died in so many movies. I can't believe she died off screen in this one when, like, it felt the most appropriate to see.
Well,
I was
just
super
weird about her
bummed.
Death, too, is that she, like, right before she dies off screen, she stares at the camera for 4 or 5 seconds. Like, why? Yeah. What? Why?
Yeah, it's just really all over the place. Like you said, like, tonally, structurally, it's everywhere. It just feels like it can't settle. You know, a completely different type of movie, but I saw yesterday Pacific Rim Uprising, okay? And the movie has, like, the same issues. Like, it just can't...
I am so interested to see how you're going to connect these two movies.
Well, here's the thing. Like, it's just as bad. Like, it can't decide what movie it wants to be. It keeps introducing new stuff, like, every other scene. It keeps sort of restarting or resetting, and then it sort of goes off on these tangents that don't really mean all that much to the central, like, plot or anything, but maybe shows a little bit of character development. And then we just come full circle back at the end where you sort of expected us to end. So, I don't know, it just feels like that in the way that it's like, I want to say this, I want to say this, and I want to say this, and I want to say that, but, like, I don't really care if it's, like, a cohesive narrative or if I'm clearly stating what, like, my themes correctly or anything. It's just felt like I have to say all this stuff, but I'm not sure what it means.
I think my biggest problem with this movie, because I had lots of problems, is that I just didn't care about any of these characters. And so when I was introducing these new things and these new themes and these new places and these new journeys or side stories, none of it, like, clicked for me until maybe the end. Like, if I was paying better attention by the end and I got the better sense that Charlize, like, I was there, like, I was watching when she goes over to him in that cafe and it's just like, meet me, like, she's speaking in French. Like, she speaks French in this movie, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But then she's, like, speaking in French. She's like, you know, meet me downstairs by the bathrooms or whatever, speaking in German or whatever she's speaking. That in her spy, I was like, that's kind of cool. By that point, like, I was so done with the movie that I didn't care. And I feel like the fact that I just didn't connect with any of these characters, like, Charlize was sort of, like, in a sense, a manic pixie dream girl. Penelope Cruz was just a sex object who was beaten and then murdered, or not murdered, but killed. And then Guy is just, like, this guy who basically seems he, like, lives to, like, to sleep with Charlize. And I was also thinking, Mike, you know, I know how much you hate doing the dirty corn. I was thinking maybe Getting Debauched might work.
Oh, I actually, I don't know why that just sits better with me, getting debauched.
Well, it's less gross, But yeah, because she's talking about, you know, getting debauched and all this different stuff. Mm-hmm. But like, the beginning of this movie is like sort of like a sex romp.
Yeah.
And like, Charlize gets like held up away. Like, this is the same movie where Charlize becomes a Nazi sympathizer, undercut, like a spy who goes undercover as a Nazi sympathizer and then is murdered off screen. Starts with her and her boyfriend. Her boyfriend throws a party. Charlize gets separated. Guy shows up to the party with another girl. Charlize's boyfriend sleeps with that girl, and then Guy sleeps with Charlize on a pool table, and then they wake up naked the next morning. Like, that's how this movie starts, in a movie that she's going to end for being a Nazi sympathizer. Like, how is that the same movie?
You know what, Joey? Like, it actually starts a little earlier than that, and it's even more quizzical. It starts in France in the 20s, and I think it's child Charlize goes to, like, a fortune teller, and she's told that she'll, like, die when she's 34 or something And I'm like, whoa, like, is this like 13 again? Like, is this going to be like some kind of like teenage comedy? Like, what is happening here? I had no idea how that was going to connect. I think we should have known better to a degree. And I'm totally with you. And like, I couldn't connect really to anybody. The closest I got to anyone was Penelope Cruz because I thought she had the best introduction where she's like the living statue. I was like, oh, that's a way to enter a movie. I don't know. Like, I kind of like, she just felt the most filled out. Like, she's from Spain and she had to leave because of the war, and she disfigured, like, one of the soldiers like beat her leg and stuff, and she's, you know, being a model in France to earn money to train as a nurse so she could go back and help with the war. She pretty much is the only character that has stated what she wants to do and does it. Like, this guy, dude, I don't even know. I never get a grasp of who he is or what he wants. Like, when we meet him, he just seems like an academic, just like this sort of greenish, doesn't know about the world, only knows what he learned from books. Yeah, oh, no, nothing about women. I don't even think he knows who he is. And then the first, like, 20 minutes is just Charlize, like, teasing him and, like, getting him to, like, come to France, and then he goes back to London. It's like, France, London, France. Like, I've got whiplash with the relationship in the first half hour of this movie. And it's really not until Penelope Cruz is introduced where I was like, okay, like, at least I could grasp onto her and then try and, like, stay afloat. And then she dies. And I was like, oh, shit, she's gone. And we go back to France. But, like, I thought it was kind of interesting what happened with Penelope Cruz's character. Like, she's, like, so gorgeous and so beautiful in France. And then when we meet up with her on the battlefield, I mean, she looks like hell, you know? She looks just like she's been blistered by the sun and beaten by the elements and the strain of war and everything. So I was like, okay, like, she's really given it. I feel like she's in this movie more than anyone else, at least.
Yeah, which is cool. She's also top billed in this movie again, which is important to note.
What else? Oh, her and Charlize. It's Charlize,
yeah,
then
Charlize
her.
Charlize number one and Penelope Cruz number two. Yeah, which is cool because the movie, you know, it feels like it's about the guy for a while, but I guess whatever his name is, I'm not even going to look him up. No, Peter Townsend, I think. The fact that he is not top two billed is cool. This director, who also wrote this movie, has made like 25 movies. I've seen none of them. I was like, that's probably not a good sign. I was also trying to figure out, like, I was sort of confused before I even started the movie, because there's a couple other movies called Head in the Clouds, and I convinced myself that this was a remake, and it wasn't. It's just a straight-up new invention by this guy who apparently doesn't know how to tell stories.
It's not even based on a book or anything, because this totally feels like there's half a
no,
novel
yeah,
sitting
that's
somewhere.
Also, like, well, the fact that it wasn't based on a novel or a previous thing, like, it's just, he's the writer, that's it, end of story. I was like, oh, God.
It's weird, like, there's this wave, like, you mentioned before we started recording, like, it kind of felt like Captain Corelli for a while, and I was like, well, it even kind of felt like Walk in the Clouds with Keanu. Like, there's this weird genre of romance war stuff, and I guess Pearl Harbor's in there somewhere. I've never seen Pearl Harbor, but I think that has more action than usual in it. I've never really been able to get through these types of movies. Like, I don't know what.
So here is a recommendation that I didn't think about until we started recording. I did not think of this recommendation. There was a movie that I saw last year at Fantastic Fest. I don't know when it's coming out. It's called See You Up There, and it is a French, all French language World War I film that's also kind of a love story, and it is magnificent. It's beautiful. It's incredible. I cannot say enough good things about it. I don't know when it's coming out. This movie, like, because I was thinking, like, I just like you, I don't like this genre. Like this, like, it feels like the kind of people who, like, I think there's a certain kind of woman, and not this is like a criticism or a compliment or anything, but just like there's a certain type of woman generally, but a person maybe, who love like those like period, like the Jane Austen sort of, like, that's like their ideal romance. And Jane Austen novels are really funny. Like, they're sometimes really, really great, and I do like some of them.
She's super witty, right? Like,
right.
Yeah.
I think there are people who idealize that version of romance as the epitome of romance. And this, I feel, is sort of like kind of a modern version of that, like as modern as maybe that can be. Like, it's enough of a bygone era that you can sort of romanticize this as well. Like, I feel like you can't really do this about the Vietnam War or anything more recent. Like, it's too gritty and real and raw. Like, there's enough time removed that you can talk about, like, the Greatest Generation and, like, tell these love stories. Yeah. And like you, I don't like any of these except some. For, like, and that's why, like, you know, See You Up There, when I was watching the trailer, because it was one of the last films added to the Fantastic Fest slate last year, I was like, oh, I'm not going to like this at all. But it was getting such rave reviews. I was like, let me give it a shot. And I was blown away. So I think there are versions of this story or this type of movie out there that are good.
Yeah.
And I was also thinking while we were watching this, because I had so much time to think of other things, that when we talked about Something's Gotta Give for Keanu Club, I couldn't get Tobin's voice out of my head. Like, they're not making this movie for you.
Yeah.
Like, they're making this for someone else. This is someone else's, like, favorite movie or whatever. And that's cool. But we had to watch, you and I had to watch it, and whoo boy.
Yeah, I hear all of that totally. I agree with a lot of that. Like, there's something to me very mainstream in general just about romance films, no matter, like, if they're period pieces or if they take place today or if they're in the future or whatever. So to me, this just felt like very safe and sort of calculated and sort of like we're going for a certain demographic. And, you know, whether it be men or women that like this type of stuff, I think you also latched on to something about the era. Like, this is that total, I don't know. It's just, I think the idea that it's a world war and, you know, this is the end of, this is possibly like the end of everything. There was just an air of romanticism about it all and chivalry. And there were just values back then that stood for more, I guess. And then when we got closer to stuff like Vietnam and everything in the Iraq War, like, it just feels like dirty. Like, the stories we're telling aren't about the relationships between the men and the women. It's between the men and the men fighting the war in the shit and stuff. And, like, things just got way, 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 way heavier in that, in that direction. But still, yeah, I think, like, my issue is this is geared very much toward, like, a mainstream audience. There's nothing very controversial going on in this film with the material. They really shy away from what I feel was supposed to be a heavy theme, which was the lesbianism between Charlize and Penelope Cruz. And there is, like, zero of that. I'm not saying, like, you know, I need that or anything, but I'm just saying, like, it's obviously something they should have tackled.
Well, because they bring it up.
Yeah,
when Penelope Cruz and Guy are talking when they're away at war, she says, you know, we were lovers. And it's like, you know, I sort of sense that. And, like, that's it. Like, that's the beginning and the end. It's like, why is that? Why include that at all if you're not going to, like, they sort of, like, I guess, sort of kind of hint at it. But again, that's another thing that I don't like about this kind of movie. It's like, it's the extreme subtlety of everything. You don't have to just come out and say it, but, like, give a little bit more.
Yeah.
Like, for it to be such, like, a core part of these characters, like, show a little bit more.
Personally, for me, it's a movie like Inglourious Basterds is exactly what I want from this type of material. Believe it or not, there's, like, a lot of romance in that movie. You know, it's just mostly one-sided, like, characters are not reciprocating the romantic advances and stuff, but, like, all the stuff, like, the French War thing and the sort of, like, tiptoeing around, like, relationships and, you know, with the Germans and the French girl and that whole stuff. Like, I feel like, you know, the idea of having to be with a German officer just to survive, but then sort of also being a spy the whole time. Like, I really like how they did all that in Inglourious Basterds. Like, that's the issue, is, like, you know, this material feels like you really need to push it. And so when they do sort of like a light version of it, I mean, this isn't all light. Like, a Nazi does get his head blown off in front of Charlize and his brain splattered all over her and everything. Like, that does eventually happen. Like, there are moments in this movie, but in the long run, I feel like they really shy away from the material, where, like, there's examples of other movies that really
take it all the way. And it's too bad, because there's a lot of moments here that I feel are missed, which makes it even more frustrating.
We are not alone in not liking this movie. I was looking on Wiki, because I went on Wiki to read the plot summary. Because
I'm surprised, though, because I went to rate this on Letterboxd, and there's like 4 stars, 3.5 stars. I'm like,
oh yeah, the average rating is a 3.1. On IMDb, it's like a high 6 out of 10. And I was like, oh boy. So I think the public, I think you're right, like the mainstream audience likes this. But on Wiki, Stephen Holden in the New York Times, and we don't normally do this because I don't really care, but I went to the Wiki to look at the... Because, I mean, it really, it doesn't matter. Like, because what this podcast is, for better or worse, is what we think of it and how it sort of fits into her overall arc. I don't really care what film critics say unless I stumble upon it and they absolutely agree with me. And so I went to Wiki to look at the plot summary because I was like, I am not following this because I'm not really paying attention and I wanted to make sure I knew what happened. It's like halfway through the movie, I read the plot summary. I was just like, I'm just going to read the rest of this because I don't like this movie, and so I knew what happened, and it's sort of, I was able to like look up and be like, oh, there's the ambulance, oh, there she is, like telling the guy to go downstairs. Stephen Holden, the New York Times, says the strength of Charlize's go for broke performance only underlines the weaknesses of the film, which plays like an entertaining compilation of Hollywood's favorite World War II cliches. And so it's like, Charlize is going for it, but there's nothing else of substance here, and it's things you've seen before over and over again.
Yeah, and it's lots of things you've seen before that could sort of handle their own movie crammed all into this. Like, there's like 15 minutes of this movie was like taken and stretched out and made into Captain Corelli's Mandolin. You know what I'm saying? Like, technically, like, that movie is in this movie.
Yep.
Also, like, that's what I'm getting at is, like, there's just, they tried to tackle way, way too much to the point where it's just like, it's like the whatever the load bearing beam was, like, snapped about 3/4 of the way through, and the movie just slowly sort of like crumbled into a pile of mess.
Peter Travers of Rolling Stone gave it 1 of 4 stars and called it a World War II melodrama of epic silliness and supreme vapidity. Ooh. This spark-free film has no place to go on the cast resumes except under the heading of cringing embarrassment.
Yikes. Yeah, yeah. It's really weird when you when he can like stage a real, like, the movie looks beautiful, okay? Like, there's the one compliment I could always throw out when it deserves it.
Of course.
Movie looks great. And he can stage a sequence. Like, he can stage, like, a really sort of cutesy, sort of, like, cute, meaty, cute kind of thing between Charlize and Guy. Like, there's moments where I believe him, but then the next scene happens and I don't believe anything. And then there's moments at the end with the war stuff where, like, wow, like, this guy could, like, really stage, like, street battle or, you know, a firefight. And then he'll just slip up in the next scene where he has Charlize stare directly down the camera. It's just like, wait, what? The guy's got, like, talent. It's just, like, misdirected in all these weird ways. So, like, it doesn't feel like the same movie a lot of the time.
No, you're absolutely right. I have one other review, and I thought it might fill into that, but it doesn't. In the San Francisco Chronicle, Walter Adiego called it a glossy, stiff melodrama. If not for Charlize Theron, it's hard to imagine this film would have attracted anywhere near the kind of attention it's gotten. She's not at all bad, but her role as a young American heiress and libertine feels recycled from scores of other movies.
Hmm.
There's fine stuff in this. There's things that aren't bad. There are things that could be better. There are glimpses of a better movie, but the package that's here just feels like movies I don't like. It also reminded me of The Last Time I Committed Suicide, where it's just like these like young, aimless, ambling around young people who are all, for the most part, attractive, like, just living a carefree lifestyle until, like, shit gets real, man, and, like, that it just, they have to go be grown-ups. Like, I don't understand, like, what is this, what is the point of this movie?
Yeah, there was sort of a moment in this where it's like, the party's over, and I was like, wait, what? What party? We're having fun? Like, I didn't realize, like, no. Like, to me, everyone seemed like they were running from something, but Charlize's character seems to think, like, everybody's exactly where they want to be, like, having a great time. The movie never really convinces me that they're having, like, this great carefree existence while the war is going on. Like, I kind of got the sense that at least Guy and Penelope Cruz were, like, really troubled the whole time, and they weren't on the same page. So, like, I think I was wrong, though. I don't think that was the director's intent. I think the intent was to show, like, look, like you said, like, look, like, we don't have a care in the world. Like, loving the
our
time
our heads
of
are
war.
In the clouds, I guess, right?
Yeah, our heads are in the clouds, exactly. Like, our feet are not on the ground. And I really do wish that you know, maybe that was set up a lot better. I just think, like, we travel too much and we cover too much time and we do too many time jumps in that first, like, 45 minutes to an hour where they're really setting up that whole, like, look at how ideal our, you know, rich, beautiful existence is. Because then when war comes and they go to the movies and they're all like, we're going to Spain, it would have hit. It would have had an impact. I would have felt like, you know, an impact or something. But instead, I was just like, wait, what's going on now? Like, why are we all of a sudden, you just want to go to war? You don't seem like you ever had these convictions. Like, I thought you were a scholar.
Yeah, I don't know.
I can't tell. It's just really, on top of it being long and boring, it's like all these other issues. Like, I could kind of deal with it better with Pacific Rim Uprising, because that movie just fucking flies by and it's like loud and obnoxious and stuff and distracting, you know? It's not like this movie where I was like, the last thing I was like distracted. Like,
but no, yeah, because this movie wants to be like a prestige movie. Like, it wants to be like, look at the way that we're handling these tough topics. Like, look at our way that we're like so smart that we're able to reference World War, sort of the time between World War One and World War Two. Like, look at us. Mm-hmm. But no.
No, I still think the best wartime romance drama ever is probably Casablanca, even though it's like not. In, you know, Casablanca is this sort of like the city you go to escape from war. Like, there's no actual battle in that, and we're not on the front lines or anything, but the sort of that whole idea of like occupied city and sneaking around and trying to get out of the country, like, and then running into like a long lost lover, like, that movie still holds up in that regard. And like, I really feel like they wanted to try and get some of that at the end here when they reconnect in France and stuff, but we've got other stuff going on. We've got like Charlize the spy and Guy the spy and other things like that. Like, I really wish this ended after the war when they sort of like met up, you know, decided, yeah, we're not right for each other or not or something, you know? I don't know. I just really feel like we were left dangling, almost like there's no real, I don't feel any real conclusion, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, neither do I. I'm just glad that we did not have a guest for this episode, because there are some movies that I would feel so bad. You know, we have guests. I'm looking right now. We have guests for the next 17 episodes, and I can tell you without a doubt there's going to be shitty movies in there, because Watch the Throne has been filled with shitty movies.
Oh, it's been rough.
We're going to apologize to some people in the future, but I'm just glad that nobody was on this episode.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe like if Austin was on, he might have had like a couple of like clever observations for us to pick up on or something.
Speaking of Austin, I did get a sort of a connection to 15 Minutes in this movie, where Charlize is talking about Penelope Cruz and how she has an exclusive contract on her modeling. I was like, oh, is she sort of like giving flashes of her 15 Minutes persona?
There was one moment in here that I felt was full-on Charlize. I don't know if it was worth watching the whole movie for, but there's a scene where she's in the bathtub wearing a hat and tie.
Okay. So here's another thing. So this is at least the third movie she's been in a bathtub.
Yep.
It's the first movie that she got naked in a bathtub. Because in Sweet November, she's in the bathtub with Keanu. In Waking Up in Reno, she is in the bathtub, but that's not sexual.
It's like a hot tub, bathtub combo thing. Yeah.
And then this, she is naked in this bathtub for like what feels like longer nudity than we've had in a long time. Like, she's on screen just like the camera is ogling her and her topless body for a while. And I was like, this feels so late in her career to be like objectified this way. Like, I get that if you want to get, if I'm sure she probably had some say in this. I don't know. It's hard to know, you know, what the vibe is like on set. I feel like at this point in her career, she probably has some say in it. But like, why is it going on for so long? And why this movie? And why with the guy from Trapped?
I know, that blows my mind the most. Like, there's no way I would never have thought that was the same guy. I never thought they would have hired that guy again for anything. Look, I'm not an actor. I can't say
he's
I could do better.
He's been in a bunch of movies, though.
The one thing about the nudity in this was I actually didn't think they were going to show it, and then they did, and I was like, oh, man, it was, like, so tasteful, and then you kind of not ruin it, but, like,
just tasteful.
Just in that they weren't showing anything, I felt. Like, I thought that bathtub scene was just going to end, and then she kind of gets up in the bathtub and leans forward, and they start making out, and it goes on and on.
If she didn't get out of the bathtub, it's like this, like, cute, intimate scene where she's in a hat and a tie, and it's like, oh, look how close they are. But then it becomes, like, this, like, seedy scene, sort of. Like, I mean, it's still, like, romantic, I guess, between them, but it changes the way that we watch it. And it's like, look, like, let's objectify her. There is a scene earlier in this movie, though, where a guy is dressing Charlize. Oh, he's like, help God. Me close my dress.
Yeah.
He starts kissing her neck and then basically turns her around and goes down on her while she's standing up. And I was like, what?
Dude, yeah, the sex in this movie just feels so, like, aggressive and unrealistic and movie sex to me. Like, even starting back on the pool table, I was like, how are they? She's just going to go right on. Like, I don't even look like
oh,
they're...
Oh, that in table the is ruined.
That, is that too. Ruined. Well, I'm sure he, like, he throws that out and buys a new one because those dudes are, like, Gatsby rich. When he's, like, going down on her, I was like, there's no pleasure in that. Like, there, how, what, that doesn't even work like that. Like, he is, the way he's just, like, sort of, like, in front of her, I couldn't see how that worked. And then later on in the movie, there's a scene where I guess they're going at it, and Penelope Cruz, like, kind of, like, spies on them or, like, sees them, and they're just, like, devouring each other in, like, movie sex way. Like, it just does not look at all, like, passionate or sensual or any of that. It just feels like aggressive and like counter to the tone of the movie. Like, it should be, you know, like nice. I feel like it should be like nice romantic sex, not just like brutal sex. It's weird.
First of all, I want to say there are so many scenes where Charlize and Guy make out or have sex with another guy in the apartment somewhere else. Like, I think when he goes down on her, her boyfriend or her fiance or whatever in the other room.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's right.
There's a scene where he visits her and she's with the new guy who she eventually abandons. He's like getting ready for bed and like she grabs him and they make out and like you can see the guy in the background. Then there's a scene where Penelope Cruz sees them and it's like, why is this? Like, is it just to show that their passion cannot be quelled by the presence of another person? But then there's the other scene, Guy and some woman, I don't remember who the woman is, but he hears Charlize and her first boyfriend having sex through the walls.
Yeah.
Like, it's a waking up in Reno thing. But yeah. At least that fit in the wacky tone of that. This is just like, why does this feel like an 80s sex comedy when it's like a 1930s period drama?
Yeah, and here was sort of the coup de grace for me is the S&M sex scene stuff.
Oh, to get back at the guy who beat up on Penelope yeah. Cruz. Yeah.
Like, just including any of that at all was baffling to me. I guess, what were they trying to say? That, like, even in the 30s, people were kinky? Like,
well,
people were always sexually kink, like, freaks, you know? People were always freaky in the sheets and stuff. Like, I mean, look, I think it's a good sort of, like, revenge for her out of nowhere in the middle of this movie, but it is not, like, necessary at all to go down this avenue.
So what I did not like about that scene was the entire scene.
Yeah.
What I did like about the scene was that they set it up kind of well the scene before when Charlize sees Penelope Cruz beaten up and she's like, please close the door, please close the door. And then she goes and Guy is like, I'm gonna tell the police, like, let's go to the police. And Charlize says, you can't because, you know, Penelope Cruz is like this exotic dancer or whatever.
They're yeah, she's basically
she wanted
a stripper,
it, whatever. Kind of. Like, it sucks and it's terrible. And then Guy is like, well, I'm gonna go beat him up. And then she's like, yeah, then you're gonna get arrested. So Charlize, like, I like that the movie takes the initiative to be like, Charlize knows that the only way to get back at this guy is to sort of embarrass him, sort of in like a dragon tattoo way. Like, it's like a sort of extreme dragon tattoo way. I don't know why they have to show it for as long as they do, other than like, hey, look at Charlize Theron in the sexy underwear. Like, look at this. Yeah. Like,
Yeah, yeah. And I didn't get the sense that that guy would leave them alone. Like, there's no closure to these scenes, to a lot of this stuff for me. Like, I felt like that guy is still out there and he's going to come back at some point. And, like, you know, maybe he's going to pop up at the end and, like, shoot somebody. I don't know. But we never really get told that he's, like, we're done with him. We just get, like, Charlize is just like, I've handled that. That's all. Like, the movie lets us know. But, like, in the back of my mind, I'm like, no, like, if I was writing this, like, that's not the end of that character. Like, he needs to come back or some kind of thing. Like, maybe he teams up with the Nazis at the end or something. That all that stuff, though, that just goes along with more of that, just like how sex in this movie is just like, it's not tender, it's not passionate, which is seems like the opposite of what they were going for with like a romantic wartime movie, you know? Like, I'm just confused. Yep. Like, that's what's going on now. It's like, it's not romantic, it's weird. Like, it's aggressive and off-putting.
The only other note that I have, it's one thing that I did like about this movie, is that when Charlize and Guy are going to see her dad, she's driving the car, which is cool. I mean, it's probably her car because she's like this, you know, millionaire heiress or whatever. But she's driving the car, and it's a cool car. And so I was thinking, you know, I was thinking about Too Fast, Too Forever. you know, thinking about what car is this? Can we play the car guessing game? And then I was also just like, I like that in this weird sort of progressive moment, it's not the guy driving the car, it's Charlize driving the car. So I sort of like that. I mean, that is such a minor thing to be excited about in a movie, but I had nothing else going for me in this movie.
I actually quite liked how her dad was portrayed, because I think we find out her mom is like a crazy person who like jumped overboard, right? Like she killed herself like on a cruise ship or something. I think there's like one headline and it's like attempted suicide, and then guy is like at Charlize Theron's mom's funeral. So I had to like piece that together. I'm not sure if I even got that straight, but I do like the way her dad is portrayed, where it's like at first you see him and you think that he's gonna be sort of like this hard ass general dude, but he just turns out to be like a normal dad, and he's just like, what are you up to, what are you doing, you still doing the acting, like who's this new boyfriend, la-di-da. And then they have like that dinner. He kind of caught me off guard. I was like, let's spend more time here at this estate, like this is gorgeous, like she's loaded, like let's just hang out here for another like 20-30 minutes. But the movie's like, nope, this was just another one of those diversions that we're gonna take another one in about 10 minutes, so hold on to your socks.
Oh boy, I have nothing else to say about this movie. You have anything else you want to say about Head in the Clouds?
The only thing I was thinking about while watching this, or one of the only other things I was thinking about, is when she might have shot this movie. Like, I just hope she shot this before Monster and, like, chose this movie, you know, before she had more sort of, I guess, freedom. Or I just hope this came because it came out after Monster. I just hope it was made before Monster, because I don't know. If this was, like, all she was offered after that movie, like, that's crazy. You know, like,
yeah, I don't know.
Like, I really want to know what was the movie she made after Monster that she just, you know, that was like the, okay, now I've got the Oscar, I've sort of could, like, pretty much like got all anything I want to do. I hope it wasn't this. I don't know. But again, circumstances, like, we never know any of that stuff. What her, you know, she could have been contractually obligated to make this movie or something. Who knows? But it's just too bad that this came out after Monster.
Because I'm looking, and like, the next movie she's doing is The Life and Death of Peter Sellers, which I know you're excited about, your Pink Panther fetish. But that's also a TV movie, so I'm assuming that was sort of like a quick thing, maybe like a favorite. I don't know. You know, that's sort of that's a real generalization. We'll find out next week. The movie after that is North Country, which she's the star of, which I've never seen, but has a really stacked cast, so I think that's probably something she wanted to do. And then the movie after that is Aeon Flux, which I'm sure she's like, hey, I did this heavy drama, I want to go do like a movie where I kick some ass. And I feel like, I agree with you, like, I hope that this is not the movie she did immediately following Monster, and I don't know that the next movie is going to be either, even though that came out in 2004, okay. But then from 2005 on, I think that's sort of like when we're in the era of like Academy Award winner Charlize Theron, maybe. I don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah, it's just because I was like charting that kind of stuff. Like, it's always just interesting to see what the actor does after they win the award, you know, and like most of the times it's a big blockbuster disaster of some kind like that. And like, here we got a disaster, but it wasn't what I was expecting after Monster. I was definitely thinking something more like Aeon Flux would come next, and then we would sort of get back to this type of thing down the line.
Yeah, like what Cage did.
Right, yeah.
Alas, we talked about this. We are going to try to play a game that we played last week with Kara, which I have not edited that episode yet, but I'm going to cut out entirely because it did not work. She was confused, and rightfully so, because we did not explain it well, we did not set it up well, we threw her in over her head. So, we started this podcast off with 10 episodes of the Recast game. We quickly got tired of that, got burnt out, moved on. Then we did 10 episodes of Pitch a Sequel, where we tried to pitch a sequel to a movie that we were talking about. Thank God we don't have to do Head in the Clouds 2, that's all I can say.
Head in space.
Yes. Just like the first game, we got tired and burnt out of this one. So we're moving on again. What we're going to try to do, and I don't know how to best do this, but it's better that we're on an episode together alone than with a guest, is we're going to try to connect or create a shared Charlize universe. And then with every movie that we do, with the next 8 going through episode 30, we're going to weave that narrative in somehow. So I think for guests, even though they haven't seen the previous movies, if we tell them the story of what we're creating, they'll at least be able to, because I mean, I don't want to brag, but we have pretty creative friends, and I think they'll be able to like sort of play along and sort of improv with us. Uh-huh. I think that if we tell them the story with like these like 5 or 10 or whatever Charlize characters running around in this world, they're going to be able to weave in the current movie, whatever movie we're doing, into that. Maybe. Maybe not.
Maybe.
This might go up in big flames. Who knows? But
it might be something we just revisit when we have solo episodes, too, and build up.
So we'll come back to this when we do the Huntsman Winter's War, and then that's probably it forever. So, okay. Maybe. Here's what we're going to do, Mike. Since I have a random number generator, we have now done 22 episodes. So we're going to do Head in the Clouds because this is the current one. But I'm going to take four. How many do you want to weave together? Do you want to do five, or do you want to do more than five or less than five?
Let's start with five. Let's see how that goes.
So I'm going to do random numbers between 1 and 21, and then we're going to link these movies together in a narrative that we're going to elaborate upon for the next 8 weeks. So, first up, Head in the Clouds. Next is number 6. Oh, cool. Devil's Advocate. Nice.
Oh.
3, which is That Thing You Do. We're on a... Yeah, all right. It's 7, which is Celebrity. 13, Men of Honor. Okay.
All right.
And then 2 Days in the Valley. Okay.
Okay.
So we are now going to create... Oh, no. We're not doing that because we're doing 5 total. So forget that one. So now we are going to weave together Head in the Clouds, The Devil's Advocate, That Thing You Do, Celebrity, and Men of Honor. So I think the place to begin, maybe, is Men of Honor and this movie, because they're both sort of period pieces.
You want to do, like, theatrically, chronologically movie time-wise? Like, the movies that take place
I think
earliest?
So. So, like, this Charlize is an ancestor to the modern-day Charlize-I.
Yes.
C-H-A-R-L-E-Z-I. Plural of Charlize is Charlize-I.
I like it.
This? Okay. So, okay.
Uh-oh. What's the matter?
I'm trying to think. Okay, so here's what happens. Guy gets Charlize pregnant before he goes to war. We don't see that. So she is this Nazi sympathizer, all this different stuff. She gives birth. I don't know if this fits at all. We might throw this out. But she gives birth off screen. There's a baby in this movie that we never see, that we never hear of.
I like it.
But the baby is born in, say, like 1940-ish. That baby then goes on, following in her mother and father's footsteps, these war heroes, in a way. She goes on to marry... She moves to America because Charlize is an American heiress. So she moves back to America. She moves in with her grandfather, maybe. Who knows? Whatever. She then grows up, has such fond admiration for military people that she then marries a military person and has... She then becomes the Charlize... The baby that Charlize has in this movie becomes the Charlize in Men of Honor.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Cool.
All right.
Now you connect it from there to whatever other than the other three. So we have Devil's Advocate,
That Thing
You
Do,
and Celebrity. Any order you want.
Okay, well, I think That Thing You Do is next, right? Like, as far as, like, chronologically?
Or is that in between?
No, because he's going to Vietnam in that movie, right?
Okay.
Yeah, so that's like 56 or 7 or something like that.
Okay.
So I'm taking Charlize from Men of Honor.
Where she is now married to Robert De Niro.
She's married to De Niro. De Niro is like a, you know, in that movie, he's like a alcoholic.
Yep.
He's sort of like throughout the movie, he loses his like career and everything like that. And then at the end, everyone kind of gets their honor back in the courtroom and everything.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But De Niro,
give me
like,
them 10 steps.
Yeah, yeah. But like Cuba goes on to greatness. Like,
yes.
De Niro's character is sort of forgotten into the annals of history and all that kind of thing. So what I am proposing that happens is just that, like, after that courtroom thing, De Niro just, like, hits the bottle like crazy, dies.
Ooh.
Charlize becomes a widow, and she's like, you know what, like, this military life has been in my family for too long. Like, my mom was down with Guy in France, like, I was down with De Niro. Where were they? In the South somewhere. Texas, right? Something like that. She's like, I gotta get out of here. I'm going to California.
Okay.
I'm gonna find me a dentist and settle down. But she gets sidetracked and runs into another person named Guy and is like, this is Kismet.
Whoa.
My grandma was at war with a guy named Guy. I found this dude named Guy. I'm gonna stick with him for a while and see what happens.
So Charlize is, so just to be clear, and it's fine because we don't have to, be the same Charlize because it's no, different. I know. Charlize. Yeah. So this Charlize in that's now with Guy is a different Charlize, or is it the same Charlize?
No, this is the same Charlize. She has left. Well, De Niro died on her, and she went out, and she.
But is this the same Charlize from That Thing You Do, or are there two Charlize now in this universe?
Can it be the same? I was hoping it could be the same.
It can be the same. Sure.
Can we go with that? I mean, is that too crazy to?
No, I think it's fine.
Because I love the idea that like her and her mom both had sex with someone named Guy, or at least like are involved with someone named Guy.
Right.
So I want to like, for my turn, I'd like to keep it the same character. She just changed her name and identity because she needed a fresh start.
I have, okay, so I have a great idea to link the last two together. Okay, Charlize in this movie, once again, classic staple, gets pregnant off screen, has another baby.
I love that. Just like, let's just keep that up as much as possible.
It's how we jump 30 years in time. So now we are now, you know, Charlize is now 35 or 30 years old or whatever in the 90s, so it's exactly where we need to be, whatever.
And she's married to the dentist now, right? Because she drops Guy and she goes in that movie with the dentist.
Yes, so she gets pregnant with Guy's baby, has birth to another girl named Charlize, but she's with the dentist now. Mm. So she and the dentist, whatever. They move on, they do whatever, because we're now following the baby Charlize.
Yes,
so the baby Charlize is like, okay, I know that my mother rebelled from her mother by going to California and leaving this lifestyle behind, but I'm rebelling against my mother and moving back to the South because that's where I feel a kinship. And she goes down there. She is this beautiful woman because, you know, throughout our history, there's been a series. This is a third generation beautiful Charlize. And she meets a young hotshot lawyer named Keanu Reeves. And
was his character name. I can't remember.
Keanu Reeves. And they fall in love and they get married. And then the events of The Devil's Advocate happen. They move back up to New York, as they do in the movie. Charlize, this is where the paths diverge a little bit.
Okay.
Or, so here, I'm going to lay out two futures.
Okay, because I had an idea too, let's hear it.
Cool. So either, number one, while The Devil's Advocate is going on, Charlize, in her boredom, pursues a side career as a supermodel. Or, number two, after The Devil's Advocate resets at the end, when we go back and Charlize and Keanu drive away, they drive away, but Keanu, knowing what he knows about this alternate timeline, has like a mental breakdown or something, and they break up because it's just the burden of what he knows and that the devil is real drives him mad. So then Charlize, now with money, I don't know, she doesn't have money because she's just like a regular lawyer in the South, she moves to New York the way that she always wanted to, and that's when she becomes a supermodel. So you look at it as a side gig or one a future after Keanu Reeves has a mental breakdown and gets committed, say, because he's like, the devil is real and no one believes him.
I love the idea that all of the events of The Devil's Advocate took place and it rewinds or it like resets so that Charlize is alive again. I love that concept. And then Keanu can't take it.
Yep.
Yeah, I love the breakdown thing. And she's always wanted to go to New York and she goes up there and becomes like the model. Definitely. Yeah, I love that. That's cool. Hilarious. There's something like poetic about it being like after the reset. Like, I love that idea. Yeah,
cool.
I like this. I mean, I don't know if this is a game per se, but I really had fun trying to do this in the last episode, so I'm glad we're working it out this time too.
You know what I might do is I might like take that game from last episode, remove it from that episode, but keep it separate. No, actually, because it got real dark, and I don't know why.
No, it got too dark, but
the world.
But yeah, like what we figured out there was it's fun to link the movies together, but we didn't quite link them properly. I think we went like this idea of the randomizing thing needed to happen. Like we were going in an order and trying to sort of restrict it too much. I think like whatever it is, it's been a lot of fun though.
So no, I love the idea of just doing five random movies. I wish, so that's what's hard about having the guests that don't know all the movies, because I wish that we could do this every week or just pick five different random movies, but most people are only going to have seen the one or maybe two. So I think what we can do is just use this narrative, or when we have a guest, we can give the guest an option. We can either say, we can use the narrative that we've built, or the one from last week or whatever, or we can just take five random movies and try to link them together.
There you go. That's kind of fun.
It'll be up to the guest.
Okay, yeah, because that still works. Like, I would still, you know, even if one of those movies is one we've done before, like, that's fun. Like, can you connect these five movies somehow in the Charlize-iverse? Or the Theron-iverse? What did you come up with?
No, I called it the Fast-iverse. That was my most recent coining for the Fast and Furious movies.
I know, but you didn't have one for the Theroniverse or something? Or
I probably did, because I do that with everything, but I can't think of what I would have been. So, like, if it's not coming to my mind quickly, because I don't put any thought into anything that I say in these podcasts. I don't know. I don't know what it would have been.
All right, well, that's something we could work on later, but like sure. So I like, because like whatever this is, again, I'm not sure if it's a game, but it's a lot of fun. So that's all that counts.
So just to recap, we have Charlize in this movie has a baby off screen. That baby moves to America, where her family and genealogy are from. That baby grows up, falls in love with another military man, he dies. She then moves and falls in love with a traveling musician who has that guy's baby off screen, or maybe it's a dentist baby, either way, it doesn't matter, has a baby with either Guy or the dentist, although it is, I do agree with you that it's more poetic that he's just Guy, a baby with another named Guy. I like that in two generations, it's a baby with a guy named Guy off screen completely, so I kind of like that. Has a baby with Guy, that baby then grows up. So it's also conceivable in this world that mother, like grandmother Charlize or mother Charlize, now this like 60-year-old Charlize, is still around. She's like, either in Pittsburgh or California or something, or Ohio or wherever they were. The baby Charlize, the third generation Charlize, grows up, moves back to the South, falls in love with Keanu Reeves.
Moves back to the South, like out of spite.
Yes, out of spite.
Toward her ancestors.
Mm-hmm. Moves to New York with Keanu Reeves, then the movie resets, she's actually back in the South, then moves to New York as she always wanted to, and becomes a supermodel. So, what a journey for these three Charlize Eye.
I like it. I like it. I mean, do you like it? Are you good?
I love it.
All right, cool.
I can't wait to tell Kara, hey, sorry about last week, but we figured it out.
We still gave her the option to pitch a sequel. I think she came up with, like, a good sequel, so maybe we could leave that stuff in. I don't know.
Oh, I'll leave that in. I'm just going to take out the thing where we talk about, like, terrible things. So that's all going to come out.
That was a great example of how story just, like, dictates itself if you let it. Like, if you stop trying to, like, force it and just, like, let a story tell itself, like, it'll go in a direction you don't expect. And that one went way off in its own direction.
Yeah. Okay, for the Watch the Throne Awards, maybe the Golden Wallpapers, maybe the Golden Teeth, I have three things I nominated this for. I mentioned one before, Most Wildly Inconsistent Tone.
Yep.
I actually mentioned another one before, Most Extreme Manic Pixie Dream Girl. And then I also wrote down, you said you didn't think that there was going to be enough, or you didn't know that there was one before. You're now up to three. Best Dance Scene. We have Herbert dancing with Penelope Cruz in this movie, which is pretty cool, but also, like, why is that happening other than have two pretty ladies dance? Pregnant Dancing and Eating in The Astronaut's Wife, and Dancing on the Couch with Natasha Richardson in Waking Up in Reno.
Nice.
Is there anything else you want to nominate this for? Any other actors or actresses that were either good or bad? Like, I feel like Penelope Cruz is not given enough to do.
Yeah, like, I really want to nominate her just for lack of supporting actresses in other, like, she's top billed, and I don't know, I do feel like she's the only one with, like, a complete story here, but you could also kind of remove her from the movie and it kind of wouldn't matter, which is terrible to say, even worse to realize. You know, do you kind of feel that too? Like, you could kind of just sort of, like, slip her out of this movie, and I don't know that much of this would change.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I'd like to nominate her, but I just don't know.
I'm going to nominate Stuart Townsend as Will Jennings and Guy in Trapped and Head in the Clouds.
He's terrible, man. That's the guy, right?
He is not good.
Like, watching this movie, Joey, like, I'm not even joking, man. Like, I just have to stop the podcast to say this one more time. Like, watching this movie, I was like, this guy is the worst. This guy, like, there's no way he's been in anything before. There's no way I know him from anything. Like, it is just, I mean, it's just perfect that it's the same actor. I could never have imagined that.
Oh, but also, when Charlize meets him for the first time, she says to him, are you British or Irish? And I was like, that was the same question we were asking in Trapped.
And I was asking it this whole movie, too. I was like, where's your Irish accent? And then I was like, wait, what's with this Irish accent? Like, it just, oh, it's here, it's there, it's gone, it's back, it's all over the map.
No song or cinematography or score soundtrack of note for this, I don't think.
No, it looks pretty, but not to the degree. I feel like the atmosphere was doing all the work. Like, really, I would give it to, you know, if we had to nominate someone, if this was the Oscars, I would give it to the production assistant or something like that, or set designer, because, like, all this guy really had to do was point a camera, because France is fucking beautiful, you know? It's like,
yep.
And, like, all the interiors are just gorgeous and stuff, so.
There were a handful of quotes that I wrote down early on that I do not want to nominate them for, but it's like when this is like a sex romp, Charlize says to Guy, you also have a nice willy, and I hope to dream about it.
Oh,
when
my God.
When his boner is poking her in the leg. Later, when they, right before they debauch each other. She gets home, and he says to her, you shouldn't go up there. And she says, why shouldn't I go up there? And he says, there's an orgy going on. And she says, sounds promising. And then later in that scene, Guy says to her, you look lovely. And she says, you don't, which I thought was kind of funny. And then in the morning, when her douchebag bro boyfriend catches them or whatever on the pool table, he's like, what are you wearing? And she says, seeing as it's your big day, which I guess is her birthday, or I guess it's his birthday, she says, seeing as it's your big day, I'm wearing my birthday suit in your honor, which I actually kind of like.
Yeah.
I might nominate that.
That's not bad. I did write down, I just noticed for some reason I wrote down great dress. I guess in the scene after that, she's wearing some kind of, she shows up. I guess it's at the point, this is so weird. It's one of the time jumps where we don't get told it's a time jump. Like, she goes out, I think it's after she goes out with someone in France, and then Guy leaves, and then she shows up at his flat in London. He's with some other girl or something. Well, she shows up and she's wearing like an awesome dress, and I must have just written down great dress. Like, it's really, like, of all the things right now, I'm just, like, struggling.
Best fight, no. Best death, no. I'm not going to write that down because we don't actually see it happen.
Off-screen death. Oh, you know what I thought was creepy as hell, though? I just have to say, like, this really freaked me out. The idea of the cell that she was kept in, it's just sort of, like, 12 or 13 steps down to, like, a little flat area. Like, that's like, a little mini dungeon, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, I'd never seen that before, and that was really dark, and
yeah.
I was like, oh, that sucks big time.
I like, because you don't really see too much creativity in terms of cells, but there I'm also now thinking of that one cell in Game of Thrones, which if I knew more about Game of Thrones, I mean, I've seen every episode and I've read a couple books, but I don't know enough about it to know exactly what I'm talking about. But there's a cell that just has like no wall on one side.
Oh, yeah, the one in early in like season one when
yep, at Catelyn's sister's...
Yeah, the, like, the Eyrie or the Eyre or something.
Yes.
I can't remember all the weird names, but yeah.
Best love story, obviously not. Worst love story? I feel like it's not even worthy of a worst love story. It's just...
No. It's so in the middle.
It's not a best love triangle. It's just like, there is a love triangle, but it's not really good or bad. It's just, it's downplayed so much.
It's so weird, man. Like, I was expecting this movie to really sort of crank up the sex in the second half. Like, the first movie is all joking, like, orgies and lesbians and threesomes and gay people and like this and like S&M, and then I was like, all right, we're gonna get debauched like big time in the second half of this movie, and we go to war, and I was just like, oh man, it's like weird. It was like the tease that I didn't know I wanted, but I was like, the second half of this movie is like, I really just wish either the second half of this was just like crazy sexy dramatic, or the first half of this we were setting up that war spy thriller shit, because as it is, someone chopped up two movies and smashed them together,
at least two, if not more.
Yeah,
I don't have anything else I want to nominate this movie for. Is there anything else that you think is either good or bad enough to warrant,
I mean, worst actor for my man here, if that's a category yet? I don't know, but this is two movies that he showed up in, and I didn't even recognize him as the same guy. I just recognized him as another terrible actor, and like, I'm not really hard on actors ever. I don't feel like I've let them get away with a lot. Like, it takes a lot for me to think that someone's a bad actor. So I gotta give it to this guy for really just like bringing it to my attention
in two separate movies. It's astounding. I think he's maybe a little better in this, but he's just on screen a lot more, so it's like,
yeah,
he's got time to sort of have like some redeeming qualities.
Yeah, and he's against, I think he's being supported by better actors in this movie too.
Yeah.
It's like in the other movie it was him and Courtney Love basically the whole time, and so that was
not great.
No.
It is now, this episode comes out on April 27th, which means next week, the third episode of your podcast, Watch the Throne.
Oh.
No, not your podcast, Watch the Throne. That's our podcast. That's this podcast. Your episode of Third Time's a Charm, the third Third Time's a Charm, as number three is a magic number. I think you told me last time it is dun 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 dun, right?
That's right. I ain't hear no bell.
Rocky 3 comes out next week. We also got Fast and Furious 6, I guess, next week, so that'll be cool.
Nice.
We've got a lot of cool things coming up. I also want to give a shout out on this podcast. We mentioned them, I think, a couple episodes ago when we knew that they were officially part of the family. But earlier when I mentioned See You Up There, it's sort of like a real good recommendation. So I want to give a shout out to Real Bad, one of our newer podcasts on the network. That is a podcast that reviews really bad movies and talks about why they want to hurt us. At the end of every one of their episodes, they sort of give a recommendation for a movie that is like the movie or inspired by the movie or sort of reminiscent of the movie in one way or another, that is not at all bad. So, you know, for this movie, for Head in the Clouds, I would like to recommend See You Up There. Again, don't know when it's coming out. I think if you're in France, you can buy the Blu-ray. I don't know if there's a region-free import or a region 2 import or whatever you can get, Mike, maybe. But shout out to Real Bad for giving me the idea to recommend a good movie at the end of an episode about a bad movie. But yeah, go to cageclub.me/shows to see all close to 20 of our podcasts.
Oh, and my recommendation is Casablanca.
It's there you go.
Partially, I guess you could call it movie homework, but it's beneficial. Like, I think it's a really rewarding film. Check it out. It's a lot of fun. Great actors. Great movie.
You heard it here first. Casablanca, good movie. So for all things Watch the Throne, all of our podcasts, all of our shows, go to cageclub.me or facebook.com/cageclub or at cageclubpod on Twitter. If you are listening and you like this, go rate and review it on iTunes or wherever you listen to it. It's cool to get it up there. We are still just about halfway through, so we've got a lot more Charlize. And then unless something catastrophic happens to either one of us or to Charlize, it won't end when we catch up. It'll keep going forever, as we do for Cage and Keanu. This is a much shorter run than either of those two, so we're going to be done sooner than either of those. Let us know what you think of the show. Let us know what you think of the movie. Let us know what you think of what's coming next. You know, we'll read it on air, or whatever. Do your thing. I don't care. Just say hi. You can also email us, watch@cageclub.me. I don't know. Just let us know that you're listening. Just say hi to us. That's all that I want. cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, at cageclubpod on Twitter. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And we'll see you next time on Watch the Throne.
On the cloud of unknowing, my world seems open. Every satellite up here is watching.